Since 1957, the Germanic American Institute has been building cultural bridges between the American Midwest and German-speaking European countries. And this is our podcast. We cordially invite you on the inside to join us as we share insights into German grammar, the German cultural experience. We'll look at current topics, and we will let you know all about the events that we are involved in and you can participate in. At times, we will also invite guests on the show who will share their knowledge and experiences with us, and we'll answer any questions you may have about our content or the GAI itself. Willkommen to the Germanic American Institute podcast.
Time is indeed flying. This is episode 3 of the GAI podcast. And if you were in the same room with us as we are sitting here right now, you'd be realizing it's getting quite festive in here. Greenery all across the place. Christmas lights are up. And indeed, this is our Christmas edition. As usual, the two leading ladies of the GAI language division are in the room with me. We have Claudia.
Guten Tag.
And we have Katrin.
Moin, moin.
We do have a special program planned for you today in terms of what to expect, actually, if you make it to Europe with the Chris Kindle Markets. We'll talk about that. I have a top 17 list for you. We have some grammar coming to you first with Katrin, and then Claudia has information as to how to really let the champagne pop over Sylvester or New Year's Eve, as we call it over here. Let's just jump right into it. Hand it off to Katrin. What do you have for us in terms of grammar knowledge?
Today, I would like to take a little bit of a closer look at two words that tend to confuse English-speaking German learners. Confusing because in the English language, there really is only one word for this. The answer, of course, are the two words to know, or in German, wissen and kennen. So which one do we pick in German when we need to use them? And why is it especially hard for learners whose mother tongue is English? Well, if you language-wise come from a background that is French or Italian, Spanish, Portuguese, or even relevant in Minnesota, Swedish or Norwegian, there are two words. In French, for example, it is savoir and connaître, or in Swedish, känna and veta. And Old English did have two words for it, so really modern English is a little bit the odd one out here. Back in the day, there was to know of Greek and Latin origin, which we still use today, but there also was vitan, where we can see the connection to the German word wissen and the Swedish word veta. Modern English does not use this word anymore other than in wit and wisdom, so there we can still see that. But what does this really all mean for today's English-German learners? Wissen, we generally use when we're talking about facts. But we can also say that generally we use it when we express knowledge with verbs. For example, ich weiß, wer sie ist. Emphasize on ist. Kennen, we generally talk about entities, nouns, names, and so on. Ich kenne sie. Here the emphasis would be on sie. Ich weiß, wie sie ist, and ich kenne sie fundamentally express the same thing, I know her. However, the way we're using those two expressions is different. Ich weiß, wer sie ist, our emphasis lies on ist. We are focusing on the verb. Ich kenne sie, we are focusing on her, the entity. There's another way to distinguish these two words is to replace kennen with being familiar with. Ich kenne Rotkäppchen. I'm familiar with Little Red Riding Hood. When we use wissen, on the other hand, we would say, ich weiß, was bei Rotkäppchen passiert. I know what happens in Little Red Riding Hood. We replace wissen with to know. To summarize, kennen is used when we talk about entities and or when we can replace it with being familiar with. Oftentimes, the answer is a known noun or a pronoun. Wissen, on the other hand, is used when we focus on verbs and we express facts or knowledge. The answer often is a phrase rather than one word. If you would like to test your own knowledge about wissen and kennen, embedded in this podcast is a little 12-question quiz where you can test your knowledge. Es kann dir helfen, zu wissen, was du nicht kennst.
Boy, am I glad that you are doing this.
No, but that's interesting, right? Because yeah, kennen is often something when you talk about a person, right? Ich kenne Katrin, ich kenne Michael. And wissen to me has more to do with wisdom, knowledge of something. But yeah, never even occurred to me that there is only one word.
I asked my mother the other day if she could explain to me what the difference is. And at first she was like, oh, that's simple. It's quite clear when you use when. But when you really think about it, it's not so simple anymore. No. And then there are, of course, cases where it's a little bit a gray area.
And then, yeah, I can see how as a native English speaker, because it is the same word, I know. Mm-hmm. Either I know a fact or I know a person. It's the same word. But, you know, like you said, facts versus objects or people. Yeah. Interesting.
Okay, now I know.
Now I know. Weißt du es oder kennst du es?
Generally a good question. I know nothing, but...
Du weißt, dass du nichts weißt.
That is very true. Wait, that was a little loud. All right, this is what happens when you don't control the volume knob adequately. Now I do. But let's talk about Christmas and the tradition of Christmas. We briefly mentioned in our last podcast that in Central Europe particularly, we do observe the tradition of four Advent weekends. And some of the things that you may have also seen in the US are those Advent calendars where children get to pop one door open every day of the month until we arrive at December 24th. And a variety of things are behind those little doors. Might be little toys, might be chocolates. Back when I grew up, it was tiny little chocolate pieces. And of course, the 24th of December usually arrived at the 6th of December. So that's how it usually went. I popped all the doors open. And then I complained that all the doors were open.
You know, you don't have to open the doors. You go in from behind and steal the chocolates from your little siblings. And then they pop the door open and find an empty day.
Wow, I grew up so sheltered.
I was just wondering, this is insight on knowledge that in case your kids are listening, you might...
Yes,
don't. I profusely apologize.
Sorry.
No, so on that note, since I effectively took it down, let's bring it back up and talk about the tradition of Christmas markets, which is actually quite interesting because as so often in Europe, we have a lot of history and we are not exactly sure where the history originated. We don't know where the Christmas markets started. We do have something that is officially on the books, and very unsurprisingly, it was 1310 in Munich, and it started with a Nikolausmarkt. Now, if you had listened to our most recent episode preceding this one, you will know what Saint Nick is all about, and its adjacent friends Krampus or Knecht Ruprecht in Germany.
Ruprecht or Schmutzli.
Schmutzli in Switzerland, exactly. Yes. So in any way, the tradition of Christmas markets that I'm sure you're familiar with because we have them in the US as well, dates back to about 1310 as the first recognized one in Munich. And I did a little bit of Googling. Dr. Google usually has the answer, and found a list by CNN. And they have a world's 17 best Christmas markets. I'm also going to link to this article in the show notes of this podcast. And what's rather interesting is, as number one of the most recommended Christmas markets, very much probably to your surprise as well, Strasbourg, France.
Okay.
Who would have thought? Dates back to 1570, and they have kind of ballooned the concept of the Christmas markets to 10 individual locations with 300 stalls, what they call stalls or booths in our terminology, where they sell all kinds of things. Now, what started in 1310 as being sort of a meat market that also gave you the tools and preparations that you needed to make it through winter has now, of course, exploded into all kinds of things. No longer do we sell meat there, but now we sell what we know nowadays in terms of toys, in terms of little things we can attach to the Christmas tree and all kinds of food items. But it wasn't necessarily the preparation market, or is no longer the preparation market as it was back in the 1300s for obvious reasons. Number two on the list.
And if I can interrupt real quick, I wonder, because Strasbourg obviously has a cathedral or a dome, and often back in medieval times, that's where the people would come for the market anyways, right? These big these towns that had these big medieval cathedrals and domes and whatever they were called were natural meeting places for everybody. So it kind of makes sense that a market, some kind of market tradition would evolve there. Now, I don't know when the Strasbourg Cathedral was built, but many of them were built in the Middle Ages. And even if the current one is younger than that, certainly it was, or most likely was built on the spot or somewhere close by where a previous cathedral or something had stood.
But two on the list is actually the Vienna Christmas Market. That supposedly dates back to 1298, so already a couple of years ahead of Munich. And it's also one of those incredible opportunities to dive into the Viennese culture and tradition as to what's being sold there. And you will find out that most Christmas markets in Europe are not necessarily identical, but have sort of the same flair, the same feel. You get not necessarily the same foods, but rather similar foods and sort of similar toys. The mood is the same. It's you can really dive into it.
Smells the same everywhere, kind of. You have that.
Yep. Number three, surprisingly, Montreal, Canada. Number four is the one that I've experienced as well. And even though I'm from Vienna, this is one of the towns that I am just ridiculously in love with, Prague. Prague is, if you have not been there, something I would certainly recommend. It is culture and history condensed in the smallest of footprints, because Prague wasn't bombed in the Second World War, so they kind of got away with all its buildings intact, if you will. And their Christmas market, notably, is one that doesn't shut down over the 24th and 25th. So they actually stay open and they go all the way to January 6th. So even if you come after Christmas, you still have the opportunity to get some of that Christmas rush. And their food, their flair, everything about it is absolutely fantastic. Italy comes in fifth with Florence. Florence, again, is a magnificent, magnificent city. Then we're going up north, Krakow, Poland, number six. The list continues again. Like I said, the link is in the bottom of the podcast.
What's the highest ranking German Christmas market?
Well, I'm getting there right now, actually. That is number nine. That would be Berlin.
Okay.
Interestingly enough, I would have expected something to show up a little bit sooner than that.
Or the one that all people all talk about, the one in Nürnberg, the Christkindlmarkt.
Strangely enough, not on the list, actually, at all.
It's very touristy now, and I think that's sometimes what takes away from some of the traditions, or maybe it's not as old as some of the other ones, or, you know, with the stronger focus on doing the tourist stuff versus the traditional stuff.
Oh, certainly. Sweden is there, for instance. Then there's Croatia, number 14, 15. And that's rather interesting to me. It's actually the Bank of America Winter Village at Bryant Park in New York City. So rather eclectic list, 16, Estonia. And finishing up, and that's, again, another one that I would have expected a whole lot sooner, is Basel Christmas Market in Switzerland.
Okay.
So some of the very traditional ones that I would have expected to be on this list have not made the list. And I think you're very much on target with the idea that this is probably a reflection of how commercialized they perhaps have become or how touristy they've become. Take that for whatever it's worth. The one thing I can certainly recommend and suggest is if you have any opportunity whatsoever to make it to a Christmas market inside Europe, it's a treat.
And have whatever version of Glühwein or hot mulled wine or hot some alcohol something they have, right? Because I'm sure that's something that's probably sold all over the place.
I think Glühwein is pretty universally sold just about everywhere. The drinking age in most countries in Europe is 18.
And or even 16.
Or 16. And you don't have to have a paper bag over your Glühwein.
But just drink responsibly.
Drink responsibly, buy responsibly, because those things are not cheap and there is a lot to be bought.
And they tend to hit you a little later, the Glühwein. You don't notice it right away.
Oh, because it's hot and it's sweet and it's mulled wine and it tastes fabulous. Yeah.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's one of the best concoctions. Are we having more Glühwein coming up this season at some point here? Or are we out of
Glühwein? We're finished with the Glühwein to the public. We have a Christmas dinner coming up, which is by reservation only.
Okay.
And sold out.
Sold out already for about a month.
Is there a wait list by any chance?
Yep.
Okay.
But very little chance at this time to actually get a spot.
So for next year, just jump on it earlier.
Just register early. It's a fabulous handmade, hand-cooked, hand-rolled rouladen-type meal that's a favorite with many families that have been coming for decades.
I'm kind of hungry now.
Yeah, so as Günther mentioned, in Germany, it's called Silvester, and that actually is named after a person, Saint Sylvester. He was Pope Sylvester I, so you can read up a lot about the history about that, but that's where the name Silvester or New Year's Eve comes from. And we have a bunch of interesting and very, some strange, some odd, some fun traditions. First of all, Germans to each other. I don't know if that's the same in Austria. We wish each other einen guten Rutsch ins neue Jahr, which is literally translated a good slide into the next year. Now, that has nothing to do with slippery or ice or whatever. It's just a saying that, you know, when you see people out on the street on, you know, around the 30th or 31st or even the 1st of January, you kind of wish, you just say ein guten Rutsch, and that just means, you know, good luck in the new year and we wish you all the best. So much for greetings. But then a couple of traditions. Lead pouring or Bleigießen in German is an old practice where you take molten lead and dump it into pour it into a bowl or bucket of water. And then based on the shape that the lead forms, that's supposed to foretell your future. I don't know how safe that is because lead isn't the healthiest thing, but okay.
We did it as kids all the time. I mean, maybe that's a reflection upon what's sitting across from you nowadays. But
yeah, so you know, maybe a little bit of lead. But yeah, it's just an old tradition of you know, figuring out what that piece of lead, once it hardens in the bucket of water,
is. It's our version of the ink plot.
Yes, it's a Rorschach test or something, right? Some kind of a... Then, funny enough, Germans love to watch a small little film that's called Dinner for One. Dinner for One is a part of the annual German custom, and it began back in 1963 when this film was broadcast. And it's a very funny and endearing little story about a woman who celebrates a birthday and her butler, and the same procedure as last year, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Same procedure as every year. And that is a shame.
Yep. So do yourself a favor and check it out online. It's called Dinner for One, and it is all in English, but there's really not that much talk. And it's, yeah, for strange reasons, for the last 50 some years, a tradition in Germany. Then around midnight, it just goes wild. People go outside, shoot off fireworks. And actually, Günther was talking about St. Stephen's or whatever it's called, the Stephansdom.
St.
Right?
Stephen's Cathedral, yeah.
Right, Stephansdom. The bells are ringing, right? Mm-hmm. And actually, Stephansdom is known for its bell ringing at New Year's. So it is, people all stream out into the street. Fireworks are shot off. People wish each other again a happy New Year and guten Rutsch. And so the fireworks are actually a tradition that's celebrated in many parts of the world. And the noise and the fireworks are supposed to chase away bad spirits for the coming year.
Just to give you a frame of reference here, there are a million plus people on the streets in Vienna, mostly downtown. So it is tightly packed and everybody is in just festive mood, and we actually waltz into the new year.
In the street. That is interesting.
And in Germany, it's also notable that fireworks generally are illegal unless they're, you know, official fireworks or something.
Yeah.
So the only time you can buy fireworks legally in Germany is from the 27th till the 31st of December.
Right.
And then it's legal only between the hours of 6 p.m. till 1 a.m. on the 31st to actually shoot those. 6 p.m. so the kids can, you know, shoot some fireworks before they go to bed. And then by 1 p.m., everybody's supposed to be done chasing away evil spirits.
Right. Yeah, they're all Dawn chasing. And then there's a couple of food and drink traditions. We previously talked about Glühwein, which is a hot mulled wine. There is a version of a hot wine drink that's called Feuerzangenbowle, which, you know, for you non-native German speakers, sorry for the long word, but it's a hot wine with sugar and mulling spices type drink. That's a popular one. And then a type of jelly-filled donuts or Berliner Pfannkuchen or Krapfen or those kinds of things that are also used, you know, early on through the year for Carnival or Fasching.
And what do they all have in common? They're a great base for alcoholic beverages.
Soak up a lot of alcohol.
So there might be a theme in all this.
Lots of food and drink and wine. And yes, I mean, it's just having, you know, generally a good time. And then another little tidbit that they do in Austria, in addition to the bells of St. Stephen, and waltzing into the new year, the Austrians tend to listen to Die Fledermaus, or The Bat, which is an operetta by Johann Strauss. And since we have an Austrian in the room, you know, maybe he wants to explain that to us, why they would listen to that.
You know, probably for the same reasons as you guys in Germany have the Dinner for One. I'm not exactly sure what the cultural significance or the timely significance of the Zauberflöte would be. Fledermaus would be for New Year's Eve. The Donauwalzer makes sense in the sense that the Danube waltz is the most significant piece of music that came out of Austria that is danced worldwide. So it kind of makes sense that, particularly in Vienna, that we make that is sort of a custom to waltz into the new year. But as it relates to the Bat, I honestly don't know.
Yeah, and then, you know, we could probably dig into some of the history of some of these traditions. But yeah, I mean, other than that, you know, there's a countdown. You're counting down the clock, similar to here in the U.S. I'm not aware of any kind of ball dropping or anything that, like, you know, like New York Times Square. And yeah, as Günther or Michael said, it's something where at midnight, I mean, just everybody comes outside. Everybody's outside.
Do you do anything special in Germany on January 1st?
Sleep
it off.
Yes.
Let me backfill one thing real quick that leads out of the 31st into the 1st. In Austria, we have another tradition that goes beyond that. The Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra does the New Year's concert, das Neujahrskonzert, that's actually broadcast worldwide, which is something that if you have, I believe it may be CBS or something like that, if you have the opportunity to watch that, Austria is 8 hours ahead of us, or 7 hours ahead of us, rather. Yeah, it's plus 7 hours. I can absolutely recommend that. It's performed by one of the most significant orchestras in the world. And the Austrian, I suppose, government is a little behind that in terms of production, in a sense that they portray Austria with its latest and greatest, but also most significant historical pieces surrounding the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra. And right after that, there is usually the New Year's slalom, since we're a skiing nation.
Yeah, and obviously in Germany, we would probably watch some of these ski events and those kinds of things too, you know, just winter events. But yeah, it's a holiday everywhere in Germany, so.
And all of Germany experiences midnight at the same time, as opposed to the U.S. with the different time zones.
That's true. That's a good point. Yep, there's just one time zone. And it's usually, I mean, it does get cold, but, you know, not as cold as in some areas, maybe here in the States.
All right, that's it.
Yeah, so we wish everybody einen guten Rutsch.
Und frohe Weihnachten.
Yes.
Schöne Festtage.
Happy Hanukkah.
Yeah. Happy Hanukkah. Whatever you celebrate, we wish you all the best.
Let's talk about events. And let's try to get this done this time without forgetting the days and the dates. So there is Beer and Bingo, and Claudia kindly highlighted this again on my piece of paper here. So Beer and Bingo is a fundraiser, by the way. Starts on Saturday, January 19th. and takes place from 4 through 8 p.m. You have the opportunity to play a good old-fashioned American game of bingo and get some fun prizes in the process as you win and fill out your little sheets. And all this is to support the GAI. It is held at the Summit Brewing Ratskeller. Summit will be on tap, so that's the important thing. And then even more importantly, Gerhard's Würstelstand is going to be on site. Now, what's a Würstelstand? Quick translation.
A brat stall.
Or a sausage booth, right?
Wurst, beer, and bingo. Beer and bingo. So Saturday, January 19th, 2019, 4 through 8 p.m. Then we'll continue on with Germany and Science, or German and Science. There are two events that I have here on my little sheet. One is Monday, January 21st, where we look particularly at the science of solar power, and then Monday, February 18th, particularly at the science of wind power. And you're going to hear those dates again as we record our January and February installment of our podcast.
It's actually German and Science, where you know, we're trying to talk about energy and sustainability in Germany. And these workshops are scheduled on days off from school, hence, you know, the weird days like Monday the 21st and Monday the 18th. And the other one is there are extended care options available. So meaning if your kid wants to attend a workshop for 3 hours, there is all day care available.
Are they going to be taught in German or English? Mix of both?
Mix of both. We will do as much immersion as possible, but obviously in a way where everyone can understand what's going on.
All right. So three more things that I have here. Das Moderne Deutschland, which is a GAI series, the Modern Germany, takes place from January through July 2019. The series will provide an educational experience and the adjacent events focusing on Germany's approach and success in areas including culture and society. Climate smart municipalities, what it actually really means, what they look like, what they feel like, sustainable building practices and earth-friendly initiatives are some of the things that you can explore throughout this series. And that is inspired, and you've heard us talk about this before, by Wunderbar Together, which is the Year of German-American Friendship 2018-2019. And in case you are further interested, wunderbartogether.org is the website where you can find more information. Again, that's wunderbartogether.org. We'll also have that in the show notes. The first event coming up that relates to this particular recording of the podcast will be January 12th with the event titled Yearning for Freedom, a Community and Individualism in Germany series installment, a Saturday Kaffeestube talk by Dr. Heino Beckmann, which will take place from 11 a.m. through 12:30 on January 12th. Anything we need to backfill on that? Or is that?
Come first, enjoy our breakfast Kaffeestube, and then join us for the talk. And Heino Beckmann is an emeritus honorary consul who was here in for the Republic of Germany. So he is a very engaging and knowledgeable speaker.
He's been a friend of the GAI for many years, and his programs are always high quality.
So we should have packed house, I hope. German classes for adults. As you know, we have a reputation as not just being a house of culture, but also a house of language and teaching. German classes for adults are starting in January as well as in February, and you can find all the information to the skill level that pertains to you on our website, which is gai-mn.org. Then last but not least, it's not only about adults, it's also about kids. Not the Sunday school, but the Saturday school. We call it Samstagsschule. Those are German classes for kids and teens. They start over on January 12th here at the GAI on Summit Ave. Again, if you do want further information as to the exact timing and how long those programs are, once again, please visit us at gai-mn.org.
Samstagsschule is expanding, so if you haven't looked in a while, make sure you take a peek.
Expanding. Yep. Where are we expanding to?
Additional classes are offered for children as young as 5 all the way up, or four or five, all the way up through teen and high school age, and different skill levels and different groups. So we have a lot more.
And then you join us in the adult classes, or you go to one of the local colleges and take German classes there and become a major, because we do need German teachers in this town.
Absolutely.
Or you test out of German because you know so much and
even better,
save on credits.
There you go. Makes it cheaper. Mm-hmm. Anything else we have for today, or was that pretty much it? Are we wrapping?
It's a wrap for this year.
It's a wrap. Oh my God, yeah, it's for this year. Once again, a guten Rutsch, Happy New Year, and we will catch you. We will catch you in 2019 for more to come. More information, more German, more grammar, more knowledge, and everything else that relates to the Germanic American Institute. Until then, have a good one and auf Wiedersehen.